There are those who say that this is ordinary, but don't let that fool you. Mother will always be the bravest, least ordinary, most difficult, utterly challenging career that anyone ever hopes to lay claim to. While others might hear diaper changer, food maker, laundry doer, carpooler, bottle washer, sweatpants wear, life on hold, wanna be doing anything else, woman. The truth is, whether it feels like it some days or not, you are in fact a shelter from the storm. You are a cape of good hope. You are a warrior who will do battle for your children's hearts, souls, attention, innocence, education, and memories. Go to battle, my friends. This is your time. We will hold strong on either side of you. We will pray for those bottles through the dark watches of the night. And when doubt comes and children break, when adults fail them, and when they push and push as hard against us as the day we deliver them into this world, we will not be broken. We may ache and see cracks tear through our hearts, but we will get up again tomorrow, and we will load the clothes and the words that need to be said again and again and again. And when the world tries to claw at them, to break them, to smash the beauty in them, may our walls hold true. May the lessons we've told, the truths we've lived, the life we've spoken into them come back easily, predictably, with wash and repeat ease. Kingdom business, Jesus work, this shaping of souls, this raising tiny humans. There are those that say this is ordinary. Don't buy it for a second. Mighty. You are mighty because you, Mother.
Mighty because you, Mother. It's almost a hard line for me even to say because I have children, and as a father, I watch my wife mother my children. I'm not the emotional one, so this is really hard for me to do. But it's really hard for me to think about what my wife does every day. I may go out, make the money, may bring food to the table, but my wife does so much for my kids that I don't even understand it. I grew up in a single-parent home with just my mom, so I know what trouble I was. Much less, I had an older brother and an older sister who were just as crazy as I was, if not worse in some instances. So, you are mighty because you mother. And today is the day to celebrate that. Today is the day we talk about the women in the room that have raised children, whether they're their own or whether they are their spiritual children. I know we have numerous women in here that mother people within the church. We have a lot of prayer warriors that do that very work in the background. People may not even realize that they're trying to be a mother to them in their prayer life for them, or that they're trying to teach them every day, this is how you should be biblically, this is where God wants you. I love you. Please do these things. And they have no blood relation to them. But they do that. There's several of them, and I don't want to name names because I'm either going to get angry looks because I'll leave somebody out or angry looks because I called you out. So I'm not even going to do that. So I know how this works. I am a little bit smart. So, but today we're talking about the might of a mother and the might of a woman in general. So that's kind of what I sent to Josh, and I said, I have kind of two titles bouncing around, and I said, you just pick one and we'll run with it. And he put mother, and that's perfect. So the might of a mother. You may not even realize how mighty you actually are. So, you know, we always see, you know, like the video said, this is regular. This is normal life. This is just what you do. It's perfectly normal. Has anybody ever looked up what a stay-at-home mom should earn per year? It will surprise you. It will surprise you when you look up what they're worth. I think 2016, it was $92,000. So, but and it's because of all the jobs. See, I've got people like, where's my check at? I want this money, right? So, but you do so many things. If you're a stay-at-home mom, you do so many things within the home that they say that an estimated value, if you were to look at it as a full-time job, is $92,000. I remember years ago, I think it was at $100,000. So that's changed a little bit, but I don't think you can put a dollar figure on it, personally. Because you do so much. You are the nurse. You are the accountant. You are the counselor. You are the psychologist, the therapist. All of those things, that's you, for you that stay at home. Now, if you go to work, you're pulling double duty. Because you're still all of those things when you get home. But you're working as well. So you still at home, even if you work outside of the home, the work that you do in the home, they estimate still to be almost $60,000 worth of work within the home, even as a working mom. So, it's a big deal what you guys do as women of the household. So, there's two ways that I want to talk to you today about how mighty you actually are within your family and within the household. Because there's two big aspects. One is within the family. You're a might within the family. And the second is might within the nation. So, now, the second one probably kind of throws you for a loop and say, might within a nation. I said, I'm just a mom. I'm just a woman. Just one person. Just how do I have any kind of might within my nation? Hopefully that by the time you leave here, that will be made very, very clear. But you have a lot of might within your family. Whether you have one kid, multiple kids, or all your kids are grown, you still have might within your family in numerous ways. And the best example we can do that I can show you from a biblical point, is Timothy. It's for you that have your Bibles today, your physical Bibles, which we all here as pastoral staff encourage to have a physical Bible. And just so I can mess with Brandon, I have mine, Brandon. So he messed with me Wednesday because I said I forgot it because I was running behind and it was in my truck. So, so in 2 Timothy, the very first chapter, and I've just got one verse out of here to just kind of show what we're talking about within the family, and it's verse 5. So to preface a lot of this, this is Paul. He is writing to his spiritual son, Timothy, who is now pastoring over a church and giving just a lot of greeting and telling him as a spiritual father how much he loves him as a spiritual son. And one of the things that he remembers about Timothy is his, so to speak, pedigree spiritually. Verse 5 reads, I am reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well. Now this is a lot of times used for Mother's Day, I understand, and all of us that have been here for years have heard this. But I want to reiterate the point of Timothy is now a pastor of a church. He is doing exactly what Stan does every week. He is standing on and behind a pulpit, or I think actually culturally he would be sitting down possibly still, and everybody else would be standing up. Why don't we do that, Stan? What happened to that culture? Why can't I sit down and everybody else stand up? So, but he would be sitting and teaching as a senior pastor of a church. So he's doing a lot of work as a pastor. But all of that whole thing, his whole pedigree, it thanks to two women of his life. It says nothing as a culture back of the day that he would be writing, to be so focused on the males of the time, for him to say your faith is due to two awesome women in your life is a big deal. So for that to be recorded historically and recorded biblically, that is a big deal. So he's doing all of this thanks to his mother and to his grandmother. So he is now a pastor because of this. His beliefs were not purely generational. That means, you know, we always talk about you're not a grandchild of God. You're not a granddaughter of God. You are a child of God. So you have to have a personal relationship with God one way or another. But his is a generational belief in the fact that his grandmother believed and had strong faith, who taught his mother, more than likely, the belief, passed that on. And both of them poured into their son, or to their grandson, depending which one you're thinking of, so much to an extent. Now he is running a church. He is pastoring and teaching a church in the faith of the day. Now, this wasn't something, as a young man, I think he's believed to be in his 30s, early 30s, mid-30s or so here at the time Timothy is. So he's still considered a young man at the time. To be a young man in this day and age, to do what he's doing, risked his life. Because they were heavily persecuted. But because of his mother and grandmother, he persevere through all of it and can actually teach. So his belief was taught and installed or instilled in him from an early age by two godly women. So, you know, this way of life was brewed inside of him. It wasn't just all of a sudden flopped down on him. It was brewed inside of him. It was implanted and brewed and grew within him for years and years and guided him through life until this point of being a pastor. So he does all of this work thanks to two women in his life. So for all the grandparents and mothers out there that have the people like myself when I was younger, or y'all heard Brandon's story, the one that, you know, you grew up in church and runs off, sometimes it looks hopeless. I understand that. It looks like they're never going to listen to you, even though that they're your son or your daughter. Looks like they're just gone crazy. But the persistence of a mother shows how mighty you actually are and how you have a generational impact on the people that you can talk to. Not just that one person, not just that daughter, not just that son, not just that grandson or granddaughter, but their kids and their kids can have a spiritual relationship with Jesus Christ. The only important, real important decision they ever can make in life, the most important one they can ever make in life, can all be based on what you teach them. Chasing and persistence of a mother is a phenomenal thing. My grandmother was the one for me. My mom, like I said, I had a single parent most of my life. She worked, so she worked a lot to provide food, provide the things that we needed. And I stayed a lot, spent a lot of time with my grandparents. And if it had not have been my grandmother saying, hey, I'll buy you lunch if you come to church with me, because, you know, I'm a fat kid, so I'm like, free lunch, yes! So I'm going to go to church with them and get free food. If it wouldn't have been for those instances, I wouldn't have known near as much about God as I do now. But I wouldn't have known about God or been even interested in God near as much as I was right before my salvation. So never give up hope. Dads always are the ones that are always tough, but mothers are the persistent ones. Grandmothers are the persistent ones. So I encourage you, first off, the might of the family that you have, the might within the family that you have, is very, very powerful. You are very, very much so a strong person within the faith to do so, to chase those prodigal children or grandchildren. So I just wanted to re-up and start with that, but the second one I found really interesting in my study. It's the might within a nation. So how is it that one person, one woman, because if you really think about it, a lot of you hear this in the news all the time, men are still kind of top dog in a lot of things. So we're talking about mothers, we're talking about women in general. So how is it one woman has might within the nation, in the United States as a whole nation. Not within just a household, but in the whole nation. One, it starts all in the family. So that first point makes a big deal. Mothering your kids into God's will and what He wants for their life. And being that, you know, we always hear the Proverbs 31 woman, being that kind of woman to your kids and grandkids, that's where it all starts. But it goes bigger than that. It gets broader than that. You can literally change the way this nation runs as a mother and as a woman. What do I mean? Well, in Esther, there's a very important woman in that book by the very same name, Esther. Kind of ironic, right? So, she is one of the most beautiful women in the whole land. She gets known, she's a Jew, so she's kind of, you know, off to the side, so to speak. But one day, the king of the time calls for his current queen. She's like, nah, I'm not going over there. I don't want to talk to him. He's the king. I'm the queen, but he'll stay over there, so I'm going to stay over here. I think it's several different times he tries to get her to come, and finally he says, you know what? Forget you. So he sends out his messengers to the land, says, I want to find the most beautiful person in the land, basically. Bring them to me, and I'll go through and see who I like. It's kind of a really weird concept to me, because I teach against that as a male. So they bring him in. He goes through, the king goes through several days, through several different women. But then Esther finds favor of the king. It's probably halfway through that, it says there's several of them have come and gone already. And Esther comes through and everything stops. He says, nope, she's the winner. So she just won the Miss, I forget his name, it's some long name. I always mispronounce it and forget it. She wins the Miss King pageant, okay? She is Miss King now, okay? So she becomes queen based off of a beauty pageant. Don't some of you wish that you could be king or queen off of a beauty pageant? I would lose, but I mean, you know, some people could probably wish for that, but Esther does. She actually gets to become a queen because she's pretty. Not because she's smart, not because she's educated in any way or has any kind of status, but she wins because she's beautiful. And as a Jew, you know, there's never been the, you know, safe nation. Even to this day, they're not always a safe nation. There's always somebody trying to get after them and hurt them one way or another. But Esther now is a queen, right? So we should be good. That's not the case. One day, one of the king's men, one of his upper echelon kind of people, he goes and talks to him and wants to make this plan. Mordecai is Esther's, I forget his relation, but he's the male of the household that she's currently in. And it's kind of been the one guiding her and leading her. And this certain official of the king gets really annoyed with Mordecai. He stands at the gate every day while she was going through the process of being selected for the pageant and continued to stay at the gate, talked, and so on and so forth. Talked to the guards and actually told the king, got word to the king that the two guards outside the gate that he was by was planning against him. And nothing ever happened. Well, this official says, I'm going to get rid of Mordecai. He really annoys me. He's like, I walk by him and he has this really high-pitched, squealy voice and I just want to strangle him. But he's an official, so he has some power. He says, yeah, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home. I talk to my family about it. Me and my whole family decided we're going to actually get rid of this guy. But that's not good enough. Getting rid of one guy is not good enough for me. He's a Jew, right? So I'm going to get rid of all of the Jews in the land now because of one guy. Well, Mordecai sends word to Esther and gets word of it. She tells them, there's nothing I can do. I haven't seen the king in over 30 days. So she says, you know, I just want a beauty pageant. I have no real power. I have no real any sway with the king. And not to mention, he's kind of lost his fancy with me because it's been 30 days since I've even talked to him. He keeps persisting. He says, you know what? Go home and tell my people to pray and fast. And when I go back, I'll tell all of the women with me to pray and fast. They did that for I believe, about 3 days. And then the king, she says, then I'm going to go in and seek an audience with the king. That's a very scary thing. So now you have a woman that has won a beauty contest to become queen, won his favor that way, and now been about 30 days since she's even seen the king. She says, now I'm going to go into the throne room of the king, which is very daunting task. Very, very daunting task, because anybody that goes in and busts some doors open or gets some doors open for them and stands there and the king does not point his golden scepter at them, they're dead. It's an offense to the king, and in best way I can explain it, it's basically an offense to the king for them to enter his throne room unless he gives favor. So if he doesn't give you favor, you're done. And that's all it takes, is the king not to do this, and somebody can be dead. So Esther's like, let's see what happens. We're going to pray and we're going to fast because my God is mighty. So it's been 30 days since I talked to him, but yet she still boldly enters into the throne room at the risk of her own life. Regardless of what she was thinking or what it is, she actually says, it's in Esther 5, verses 1 and 2, but she actually gets on her royal garments. So now she's won the beauty pageant. She's one of the most beautiful, according to the king, one of the most beautiful in the land. Now she has royal garments on. She boldly enters into the throne room. But she not only charges into the throne room, but she actually walks all the way up to him because he does get favor. She does get favor with the king and actually touches the scepter, which is a really weird concept to me, because in my mind back in the day, the kings were gods, right? They were, you don't deal with them, you don't touch them. You know, in Egypt it was that way. There was a lot of, this is Persia's king, which I found really fascinating. A side note, anybody that's ever seen like the 300 movies or know history, Xerxes is also a name that he went by, so I thought that was a pretty interesting fact. This is one of the many known as Xerxes, anyhow. And in knowing history, they actually called themselves the God King a lot of times. So they have some really major power within their nation. So she walks them, gets favor, touches the scepter. Really weird thing that she does. But she's doing this not only as the king that's won a beauty pageant that has no power, but she does this presenting herself as an official queen now. So she's not just like, hey, I'm here, can we talk now? It's, I might die for opening these doors or asking for these doors to be open, but I have to save my people. I have to save my family because their life is being threatened. And I walk through these doors and he don't point that scepter at me, it ain't going to do no good. My life is done. The message doesn't get through. But she gets favor. She walks all the way to the king and touches the scepter. She begins to present herself as a queen by wearing the royal garments. She does all these little things that's presenting herself as queen now. She's not just, I'm the woman that won the beauty pageant. She started to understand, I'm queen, and that title holds some kind of authority and power. Maybe I ought to try it. So she bolds in, rushes in, charges into the throne, and does just that. See, Esther is not really a woman of might within herself. Esther, she didn't have any real political standing. She didn't really have any education, per se. She was just simply a beautiful woman that the king perhaps to have liked that day. So you're thinking, okay, Esther did it, but she became queen, right? So queen has some power. But let me say some of this again. She did not have authority to make any kind of changes nationwide. She did not have any of that power. It's not in the day where you see in the movies, you got the king and the queen sitting next to each other. The king and queen, the king had a throne room, the queen had a building off to the side. If you want to think about it that way, the king, the queen did not have any real say in matters of the nation per se. The king did all of that. Remember, he's the God king. He is all power. So she had no real power to do that. But she did it. She said, I am the queen and my family is in trouble. I need you to do this. You know the best way to get to a man's stomach? I know everybody knows this. Most women probably get told this when they're dating. It's a stomach, right? Right? Well, the funny part about all of that, Esther feeds him twice. It's not just, here's a sandwich or here's a pie. It's, hey, let me make you an entire feast and let me feed you until you're full. And once they eat, she's like, oh, by the way, let me tell you some things. Let me ask you a couple questions. So food's always a good bribery. I don't know which person is going to deny that. I wouldn't anyhow. So you want me to do something, you know, bring me some apple pie. I'll probably do it. So but she doesn't have any authority to make those changes. But she holds two different banquets for the king and for this official, actually. They're both invited to do that, so to get these changes. And she made changes because her family gets saved. The proclamation that was sent out previously for them to be destroyed gets canceled. And the man plotting for it gets dealt with. But see, she didn't even have education. She didn't have education to stand with any of the scholars of the day. She was not the smartest, the sharpest tool in the shed. She wasn't the brightest crayon in the box. But she told them what to do. She wasn't the smartest one, but she knew what she needed to get done. And as a woman, she's like, hey, I know how to cook. I can cook good too. So, hey, king, let's have a banquet. Let me tell you how good my food is. And the king keeps asking her, what is it that you want? Why did you come into my throne room? I want you to have a feast with me. Okay, I'll do that. Tomorrow, this time. Okay. King comes to the banquet. I want, what's going on? Let's eat first, and then we'll talk. At the end of it, what's the deal? Let's have a banquet tomorrow. So she's kind of putting off, but she does it two different times and feeds them. She has some really good street smarts and all of that, because king and this official is now fat and happy, and they're like, okay, that was the best, I don't even know what they would have had, the best apple pie I've ever had in my life. You had the ice cream scoop on it, and it melted just a little bit while it was nice and fresh. Now I'm making everybody hungry. I'm making myself hungry. But best apple pie I've ever had. What do you want? I'm so full. Like, they can't even sit up straight. They're laying back, relaxing. And she goes, okay, now that I fed you twice and you can't really move, I got your ear now. All right. So, see, Josh must have had that happen. He's over there laughing. So, he's like, I got you here now. I heard something went out about my people, and I need that to stop. My family's in danger. Can you please, I beg of you, please stop this. Cancel the order that you originally put out, my king, my lord. Because see, at the moment that she touches that scepter, she is acknowledging that she, or that he, is an authority figure. She acknowledges that he has power, but she's also showing him in that same moment that I am the queen, I am mighty. You know, pop culture has this whole thing of I am woman, hear me roar. That's basically what she did, okay? She says, hey, I'm here and you're going to listen now, but I'm going to feed you twice first, just to be safe. So, I'm going to get you guys out of here early because it is Mother's Day, and I don't want to be the guy in trouble and responsible for mothers being mad. So, to wrap everything up, two things that I just really want you guys to take away, to really remember from this, is your family is a never-ending mission field. It never ends. I don't care if they're saved from the time they're 4, 5, or 6, or if they never get saved until their 20s, 30s, or 40s. If they get saved early, hallelujah, praise God. Awesome. Now you have a responsibility to teach them in the way of God. If they never get saved, you are to chase after them like the prodigal son, the lost coin, and the lost sheep. All of their stories are very familiar to most of us in the room. And that's where we are to charge the son, the daughter, the grandson, or the granddaughter. That's where mothers stand. It is a never-ending thing. The video shows, you know, doors getting slammed in your face, blowing you off, walking to their room. But moms don't stop there. I know that. I say that from experience. Moms do not stop there. They persevere. They love to so much that they will take any wound, physical, mental, or spiritually, to do their best for their family and for their kids. So it may seem like it will never happen, or they're just gone for good, but never give up. And I said this, always persevere to the end. Always. Teaching times happen nonstop to little ones that you watch. So it may be the ones you babysit, little ones that you watch. It may be people within the church that are younger than you, or the little kids of the church. But anytime God has put a little child in front of a mother, I know what that mom's going to do. They're going to be teaching. They're going to be helping. They're going to be loving. But those times are important for all of us. We get to watch God present Himself in those moments. We get to watch God work through a mom and through a woman of how miraculous a little thing. You know, like falling off a bike. You know, we had that fun. It was a funny poll. It was real good, funny. And we got, I think it's 500 people looked at that or something like that. A crazy number of people looked at this poll. But in those moments, you really think back to your child. When you fell off your bike, your mom's like, let's get you bandaged up, let's get you fixed or rubbed on, whatever she would say. You know, rub dirt on it, walk off. But mom, my leg is gone. That's okay. Just rub dirt on it, be all right. But either way, your mom's like, now what did you do? And by the end of it, she's done taught you a lesson how not to do that, right? So, it doesn't matter. God shows up in those little things through women, regardless of what it is. Second of all, your nation needs you. Each and every one of you women in the room, we need you. You may never have been educated to a college degree. You may have never been educated to whenever. You may have dropped out of high school. But you have all the wisdom we will ever need. May never have political power, but you have the ability to change the nation for God. You do. Little things that you can do. Prayer is the biggest thing you can do. A lot of people say it's the least we can do. It's the biggest, the first thing you can do is prayer. See, God picks beautiful souls of women to lead the men of the world regardless of any other feature they may or may not have. Esther, like I said, was not educated. She was not powerful in any sense of the word for a nation. Not by the world standards, but God has picked the beautiful souls of mothers and women to lead us dumb sheep of men not to go off the cliff. That's why we have a whole day and why we take this time from the pulpit to appreciate and applaud the mothers of this church and of this world. So, my last concluding thought, I'm going to give it back to Stan, is to say, all moms and all women, I thank you personally. Women of the church have been massively great to me. They've been gracious to me and have taught me a lot as well. On and off the clock, so to speak, regardless of when it is. So I thank you. And I want to end my tidbit with one more round of applause for all the women.